Okay, so hi everyone, and welcome to this week Quantum Gravity Seminar. Today we have Eugenia Colafranceschi, who is a PhD student at the University of Nottingham and a visiting student at LMU in Munich. And today she will tell us about holographic entanglement in spin network states. As usual, if you want to ask a question during or after the seminar, you can raise your hand on Zoom, or you can ask anonymous questions using the Google form. And I now leave the stage to Eugenia.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to present this work. Today I'm talking about a work done in collaboration with Goffredo Pirco and Daniele Oriti on holographic entanglement in spin network states. I will start with an introduction to provide some motivations for our work. Then I will present the framework we are going to use, which is the spin network formalism for quantum spacetime. And then I will present our results, which split in two categories. So one regards the flow of information from the bulk to the boundary of spin networks, and the other one on how the bulk entanglement can affect the boundary state and its entropy, and the possibility of the emergence of horizon-like regions from volume correlations. Okay, so let's start. In the past decade, several results at the interface between quantum gravity and quantum information pointed out a deep connection, a threefold connection between gravity, holography, and entanglement. So black hole thermodynamics and black hole entropy is the main hint of holographic behavior of quantum gravity. But then we have several results in several quantum gravity approaches, the anti-de Schlitter conformal field theory correspondence, and in this context, the Liutaka-Yanagi formula, which relates the entanglement of boundary degrees of freedom in the conformal field theory to the area of a surface in the dual bulk space-time. Recent results on local holography. On the entanglement gravity connection, we have that entanglement seems to be a necessary and sufficient condition for space-time connectivity, that spatial geometries can emerge from the entanglement of completely abstract quantum degrees of freedom. And then a connection between entanglement and geometry and topology seems to appear even at the dynamical level. In fact, Einstein's equation linearized about anti-de Schlitter space-time emerge from an entanglement first law in conformal field theory. These are just some results out of a large body of work. And in the end, to close the circle, we have that many body systems exhibit holographic behavior as far as their entanglement entropy is concerned. So from this picture, a question arises. So which is the origin of this gravity holography entanglement connection, and what does it tell us about quantum gravity? So what we can learn from it. So this is the main question underlying our work, and to address it, we rely on the spin network formalism for quantum gravity that I'm going to introduce in detail in a minute. But the main point is that we use this framework because in it, quantum geometries can be regarded as arising from the entanglement among space quanta. So this represents a suitable formalism for investigating this connection. From this main question, several research directions follow. And I mention here the ones that are important for what follows. So the first one is the characterization of spin network states from a quantum information perspective to import quantum information techniques to facilitate the extraction of geometric and topological features. The second one regards the quantum origin of holography. So we aim at identifying properties of the entanglement structure of spin networks that make the Dalkin boundary holographically related. And this is the research direction that underlies the first set of results I'm going to present regarding bulk to boundary isometries. The last one, which is more ambitious, is the main goal is the modeling of black hole microstates. We started from investigating how the entanglement of bulk theories of freedom affects the boundary state and its entropy, and we will see how we can how horizon-like regions can emerge from volume correlations. So let me introduce the formalism. A direct way to introduce spin networks is starting from considering the phase space of classical geometries of a simplex, here a tetrahedron for simplicity. So we can describe its geometries through the vectors which are normal to the four faces and whose norm is proportional to the area of the faces. And then we can move to the quantum realm, so quantize the phase space. And in the spin network basis, the resulting Hilbert space is given by the tensor product of representation spaces of the SU2 group and the so-called intertwined space, which is the SU2 invariant part of this tensor product. And the spin network formalism depicts the simplex, in this case the tetrahedron, as a vertex with four links, each one dual to a face. The links carry the representation spins, and the edge endpoints, the magnetic indices, which are the spin projections, and then we have the intertwined quantum numbers, which is associated to the central node. So we have that this Hilbert space describes the quantum geometry of this simplex. Then by considering several spin network vertices combined together, we end up with spin network graphs, which are dual to simplicial complexes. And as I mentioned earlier, we have that the spins carry the edges, sorry, carry the SU2 spins, and that the nodes carry the intertwined quantum numbers. Now, these kind of states enter several quantum gravity approaches, even if they are organized differently in Hilbert spaces. So to name the main ones, loop quantum gravity, spin foam models, and group field theory. And the last one, the perspective of the group field theory approach to quantum gravity is the one that we take here, because it allows to explicitly see the spin networks as resulting from the entanglement of edge degrees of freedom. So let me here provide more details about it and fix the notation for what follows. So if we start from a set of open vertices, open spin network vertices, we have that the Hilbert space describing it is the tensor product of the individual single vertex Hilbert space. We can consider a state in this Hilbert space, and then we can, if we project this state into maximally entangled states of the edge degrees of freedom, we end up in a state associated to a spin network graph. So here I wrote the link state, the maximally entangled state of the edge degrees of freedom. We project into the tensor product of link states, which are chosen according to a certain combinatorial pattern. As far as the Hilbert space is concerned, we have the projection into a subspace, which is given for a certain combinatorial pattern for a certain graph gamma by the tensor product of the intertwiner spaces associated to the nodes and the representation spaces of the boundary links, the boundary edges, so the ones that we have not glued. We also have the sum. We have to consider the sum over all possible values of the spins associated to the edges. So we then take the direct sum.
Eugenia, sorry, there is a question by Bianca.
Yeah?
Yeah, so group field theory usually take like N-valent vertices and N minus one space-time dimensions. So here, what is the valency if you consider, for instance, three-dimensional gravity?
Therefore,
like 2+1 dimension.
So we are modeling 3D regions of space. So we are considering four valent vertices.
So is that space or space time then?
No, space. That's space. I'm not, just space. So,
that would be for 3+1 dimension group field theory?
Yeah, 3+1 dimensional group field theory, and but we stay at the kinematic level, so we just consider spin networks made of four valent vertices for a triangulation of 3D space.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Welcome. Sorry if I did not specify that. So yes, we are looking at bounded regions of space. And so let me start by presenting the work. The first part, which regards back to boundary isometries. So the first step is to observe that open spin network states can be regarded as maps from the bulk to the boundary degrees of freedom. So if we consider the Hilbert space associated to the spin network in which now we fix the spins on the edges, so we are not considering the full Hilbert space with the direct sum over all possible edge spins, but just we focus just on a fixed assignment of them. The resulting Hilbert space factorizes into the tensor product of intertwiners, intertwiner Hilbert spaces associated to the nodes, and the one associated to the boundary edges. Now we can regard the first one as an input space and the second one as the output space. And starting from this, every state in this Hilbert space defines a map which acts on a certain bulk input states by projecting the corresponding spin network state on this bulk input state. And the result of this application is a state living on the boundary. So here I depicted in green the intertwiner degrees of freedom, which represent the bulk, the input the input degrees of freedom, and the red ones are the output boundary degrees of freedom. Now, this duality can be visualized in the following way. So the graph state, the spin network state, can be seen as the result of applying the back to boundary map to two copies.
Sorry, Lee, do you have a question?
Yes, sorry about that. It was some time back, but it's a general question. Are you ever considering the quantum deformations of the state?
Quantum deformation of the links?
Of the whole theory.
No. You mean by associating by using quantum groups?
Or? Yes. Yeah.
No. Actually, this is an aspect that we did not consider yet.
Okay, thank you. I'd love to talk about this sometime.
I have another clarifying question just from the map you just described. You keep the spins on the edges fixed.
Yeah, actually this can be defined even in the completely general case in which you have superposition of spins. I'm presenting the fixed spins case here for simplicity, but the idea is the same. So the
So you could also include the edge spins in the
bike. Yeah. The result is that there is a correlation between, of course, the input and the output of the map, in the sense that we have to, of course, the full Hilbert space is not diagonal, cannot be factorized into bulk and boundary due to the fact that the intertwiners are recovering spins that are also on the boundary. But this is an effect only on the map components. But the main idea is that we are feeding the intertwiner degrees of freedom with a certain state, which has a certain correlations, and we want to see which is the result in the boundary state.
Okay, because later, I asked the question now, but you might want to answer it in the end. Because you have all these planar pictures, and in fact, each four-valent vertex you can expand into two three-valent ones.
Yeah,
and you can have a two-dimensional interpretation or four-dimensional. And how that would make a difference in the end for the results. Well, but, yeah.
So the construction is a general, even for what concerns the valence of the vertices. The only problem is that if we consider three valent vertices, we trivialize the intertwiner degrees of freedom, and so there is no.
But then you could put it on the spins.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's this rewriting just means that you express an intertwiner on a different basis.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, sure. Okay. So this duality between the map and the state can be visualized in the following manner. So the spin network state can be seen as the result of applying the map to a maximally entangled state of two copies of the bulk. So this is what is in quantum information theory called Choi-Jamiel-Kosky's homeomorphism, and is basically a tool that allows to translate the properties of the map into properties of a state. In this case, if we start from this maximally entangled state of two copies of the bulk and we apply the map to one of the two halves, we end up with the original spin network state. And the crucial observation for what follows is that if we compute the reduced bulk state, then we see that the condition that the back-to-boundary map is an isometry corresponds to the condition that the reduced bulk state is maximally mixed. This means that checking the isometry condition of the map can be done by computing the entropy of the reduced bulk state. So this is the strategy we are going to follow. We focus on a special class of spin network states, which corresponds to random tensor networks. So the construction is the following. We start from a set of individual vertices whose wave functions are picked randomly according to a uniform probability distribution. This means that if we have a function of the states, we can compute the average by considering the state as the result of applying a certain unitary operator on a reference state and then integrating over this unitary operation through the R measure. So we start from this set of individual vertices and then we glue them by projecting into maximally entangled state of the linked degrees of freedom, as I showed earlier. Then we compute for this class of states.
Okay, just to explain a bit more, what are these vertex wave functions? So they are functions of the group elements or of the intertwiner label?
Functions in the individual vertex Hilbert space. So okay. An open spin network vertex can be seen in both bases, of course. And so is the wave function for the open, so intertwiner with boundary.
So it's a function of four group elements.
Yeah.
Something. Okay. And then you, the average, but then you average independently for each vertex over the
Each vertex, each wave function is picked randomly, but independently.
So in principle, you integrate over each group element associated to an edge in some sense twice because it.
Yes.
Independent. Okay. But if you defined this maximally entangled state, you identified this group element.
Well, in fact, the crucial point in the computation is that we can, as I'm going to show, we can perform the average before the contraction, so before the gluing. And this is a crucial step because it's what allows us to map the computation to a statistic model. So the point is that the randomization is performed on all each vertex individually. But since we are then computing the second order any entropy, so we have to perform a trace, but the trace and the average are linear operations, so we can switch the two and perform the average before taking the trace.
Aren't you projecting on just j equal to zero if you do this randomization?
Sorry?
So if I integrate a function, if I take the average of the function over the group element, what I get is a j equal to zero component.
Well, maybe this is a point I should have stressed. But we are still, so in principle, the randomization is over the full vertex wave function, but we are still just in the fixed spin case. So the randomization is performed over the tensor with the interfiner spins and magnetic indices.
All fixed.
Yeah.
But then you integrate it with, okay.
For the general kind of randomization, but once we pick these initial wave function on certain spins, then the randomization is performed actually just on the fixed spin subspace. Okay, so
clarification question: when you take the trace, over which Hilbert space, the vertex Hilbert space, the edge Hilbert space?
The vertex Hilbert space in the fixed spin case, so just so on the interfiner quantum numbers and so over all the degrees of freedom, the spins and the magnetic indices.
Then you don't trace around the. The boundary spins, is that?
Over the boundary spins, over all set of degrees of freedom of the collection of open vertices, because as I said, we are, let me just say that we start from, so we are computing the second order Rényi entropy through the replica tick. And this is a way to computing this kind of entropy, which takes two copies of the wall state of the system. And there is then a swapping operator that acts just on the subset of the degrees of freedom we are interested in. So this is why the trace is over the wall Hilbert space associated to the set of open vertices. So the case we are interested in is for checking the isometry condition is the one in which we have so we want to compute the entropy of the bulk degrees of freedom. And here I am reporting the formula for a generic case in which we want a certain portion A of the boundary and the portion omega of the bulk. And through the replica trick, and if we consider the large spins regime, so we suppress the fluctuation around this term, we can compute the entropy according to this formula. So the trace is over all degrees of freedom, so open edges and interfiners, open edges of wall of all vertices, individual vertices, because the gluing is performed as a second step. So we, as a first step, we take the randomization over the vertex wave functions. And the crucial feature is that this formula can be written as the partition function of an easy model defined on the spin network graph itself. So,
Jenny, I'm sorry, there is a question by Hank.
Can you go back one slide? Yeah, so yeah. Here, when you take the second order Rényi entropy, so first of all, what is the over bar mean? Like you're tracing, like that's an ensemble?
The average value.
Tracing, for Z1 and Z0, you're already tracing over everything, right? So are you averaging?
No, this means that the average is obtained. So the typical value of the entropy is obtained by this quantity, which in turn is given by this formula.
So does
Okay. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Does the trace include a sum over spins or not?
No. Here we are just in the fixed pin space. We are actually investigating the sum over spins, but is much more involved. I can give more details in a minute when we see which is the result of this trace.
So the over bar is randomization, basically.
Over vertex wave functions.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Then my second question is: usually, when people do like this second order Renyi entropy wormholes form from, for example, two copies of the region P. So, but here you seem to assume that the state decomposes. So.
This is why is well. In fact, it's crucial in this sense having a fixed spin case because we can factorize the Hilbert space. And so we have a splitting of the bulk and boundary degrees of freedom. So only in the fixed spin case we can, we have this factorization. So we can, in fact, in here, A is a certain set of boundary links with fixed spins and omega is a certain set of interfinals.
And in your computation, is it possible for example, one copy of the boundary portion of the spins and A in one copy to be entangled with the bulk portion of the other copy? Is that possible?
The point is that we take two copies and the interaction between them, so if you want, the entanglement is implemented once we trace thanks to this swapping operator. So the idea is exactly that the partial trace is performed by first taking two copies, swapping, and then tracing on them.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So the result of this trace, the result is the partition function of an easing model. And the reason is that the randomization over the vertex states, thanks to the Schur's lemma, give a sum over swapping operator for the vertex Hilbert space and an identity operator. And we can parameterize the presence of these two terms by introducing a two-level spin, which takes the value minus one if the swapping operator is present, or the plus one for the identity. The same happens for the swapping operator, which instead comes directly from the definition of the second order Renyi entropy. So we have a set of two values, variables for the boundary degrees of freedom and for the bulk degrees of freedom. We are calling them boundary and bulk fields to avoid confusion with the other variables, which instead play the role of the spins of the easing model. In fact, we obtain that the result of this trace can be written as a partition function with an action, which is an easing-like action. So in the here in this example, the red spins, the red arrows are the boundary fields, which are controlling these swapping identity operators for the region A. In green, we have the bulk fields for the region omega, and in black, the easing spins. So here we have that we have interaction of the nearest neighbor easing spins, and the strength of the interaction is given by the logarithm of the dimension of the link. So basically the link entropy. Then we have the interaction of nearest neighbor easing spin and boundary field for these boundary edges, and the interaction of the nearest neighbor easing spin and bulk field on the vertices. To here one and zero differentiate between the two cases in which we have the swapping of the identity, the difference in terms of bulk and boundary fields is that in the zero configuration, all fields point up, while for the configuration one, the fields in the boundary region A and in the bulk region omega flip down. This means that in the end, the second order Rani entropy for this region coincides with the energy cost of flipping down the fields in the region we are interested in. So this is the main tool, technical tool. Then let's apply it to the check of the isometric character of the bulk to boundary map. So we have seen that the isometry condition translates into the requirement that the reduced bulk state is maximally mixed. So we want to compute the entropy of the bulk, degrees of freedom. This means that the boundary fields are frozen while the bulk fields are flipped down. Since the zero configuration is in the end is like a normalization constant, I will I'm not using the 0-1 notation here, but that is not important for the main idea of the calculation. So let's start by looking at the homogeneous case, so the case in which all the spins on the spin network graph take the same value. We can introduce a parameter which plays the role of inverse easing temperature and rewrite the partition function in this way. So we have the easing like Hamiltonian. And since we are looking at the large spins regime, the partition function is dominated by the minimum energy configuration. And then there is a crucial observation here. So when the configuration which minimizes the energy is the one in which all easing spins point up, the second order Rani entropy takes its maximum value. This means that the isometry condition for the bulk to boundary map translates into the requirement of stability of the whole up configuration. So in the end, we have to investigate the validity of this inequality. Now we can simplify it by introducing the explicit notation for the region in which the easing spins point down. But the result is that in the case of spin network graphs made of four valent vertices, the condition is violated because this requires that for every subregion of the graph, the boundary, namely the number of boundary links, has to be greater than the number of vertices inside that region. And this means that for that back to boundary maps deriving from homogeneous spin network graphs made of four valent vertices cannot be isometric. This was for the homogeneous case. For the inhomogeneous case, we can follow a similar path. We introduce again a parameter which plays the role of inverse easing temperature, but in this case, we have to take we have to consider the average link dimension. And so in this generic, very generic configuration, to investigate it, we label the spins on each vertex by their increasing values. In this way, we introduce a parameter which controls the inhomogeneity of the vertex structure. And we rewrite in terms of it the stability of the all up configuration and then evaluate this inequality for the extreme possible values of this quantity. Let me stress that in this case, since for So the maximum value of this parameter actually corresponds to the case in which the intertwiner space has dimension one, and so the argument does not apply. So we consider the as extreme cases the zero case, in which we are back to the homogeneous case, and so the Bartle boundary map is not an isometry. And the maximum possible value of this parameter, which does not realize the intertwiner Hilbert space. And what we can observe here is that the stability condition is satisfied only for suitable high values of the Earth spins. So the whole picture is saying that increasing the inhomogeneity of the spin assignment increases the holographic character of the map. Okay, let me now move to the final part in which we apply the same techniques to investigate the effects of the bulk entanglement entropy on the boundary state and its entropy. So now we consider a state of the boundary, which is the result of applying a certain bulk to boundary map to a bulk input state. So the construction is the same as before. So we have the set of, so we have a random speed network, and then we consider the projection into a certain bulk input state, and we want to study the properties of the resulting boundary output state. So in particular, we are going to focus on the second order Rang entropy. So the formula is similar to what we have seen before, but the main difference is that now we have the contribution from the bulk entanglement. And this means that also the easing action has an additional contribution given by the bulk entropy. In this case, the bulk entropy only for the region in which the easing spins point down. The other main difference is that since we are looking at a region on the boundary, the bulk fields in the easing model do not play any role. So we are just considering the boundary fields. And again, the second order Rang entropy is the free energy cost of flipping down, in this case, the flipping down the boundary fields in the region A of the graph.
Okay, this bulk entropy, it's the entropy of the spin network configuration or of the rising spin configuration?
No, it's the second order Rang entropy of the bulk input state, so of the state, the entanglement entropy of the set of intertwiners, degrees of freedom. So we are considering a certain state for the intertwiners. We project the spin network state into this bulk state. So we are assigning certain intertwiner correlations to the random spin network, and the contribution to the boundary entropy, part of the contribution to the boundary entropy, is the entropy of this bulk input state. But the point is that the easing model so is controlling which part of the bulk is giving a contribution, because here we have the entropy of the bulk state reduced to the region in which the easing spins point down.
Yeah, but this you choose according to which region you consider, no?
The easing spins, the choice of the region affects the values of the boundary fields. But then the easing spins is the behavior of the easing spins in some sense dynamical in the sense that when we flip down the boundary fields, and so the boundary conditions of the easing model change, then the easing spins reorganize in order to minimize the energy. So the behavior of the easing spins is the one, so the easing spins in
so
the
you end, start with an easing spin configuration on the boundary and then determines the one and the bulk according to minimal, what was it?
Energy, yeah, the easing spins, so in this case the black ones settle down in order to minimize the energy, but the fixed ones are the boundary, the red and the green ones, which control, which are determined by the region that we choose. Uh-huh. And okay, so let's start with the homogeneous case. So in this case, we can again consider an inverse easing temperature. And what we see is that the combinatorial part of the easing Hamiltonian actually gives the area of the domain wall in the easing model. So the because it's counting the links that cross the surface of the domain wall. So this means that when the bulk contribution is small compared to this area term, what we obtain for the boundary entropy is a bulk area law with a small correction, in this case, a small correction given by the bulk entanglement entropy. The situation is completely different in the case in which the entanglement, the bulk entanglement contribution is large or not small compared to this first purely easing like part. So let me illustrate this with an example. So for a specific combinatorial pattern of the graph. And let's assume that the bulk entanglement is present only in a certain region omega of the graph. So this means that the bulk input state, so the state for the intertwiners, is a certain pure state for the region omega, and outside is just the tensor product of individual intertwiners. So this part is not contributing to the boundary entropy. And we further assume that the region omega is in a random pure state. So the second order Rani entropy is given by this formula. And so we can write explicitly the expression for the second order Rani entropy of a certain region A of the boundary. And what we can observe the following. So here, in the case in which we have no bulk entanglement at all, so the zeta bulk input state is just the tensor product of all the intertwiners, the minimum of the energy is degenerate. In fact, the domain wall, the surface, there are two different surfaces with the same area, which corresponds to the minimal energy, to the minimum of the energy. And when we turn on the entanglement correlation in a certain region omega of the bulk, we can remove this degeneracy. So in this case, the contribution from the interfinite correlations can remove this degeneracy. and the scenario changes again if we increase the dimension of the bulk. Since here we are looking at the homogeneous case, the only parameter we can control is the number of vertices. So in this case, we take a refinement of the vertices. And what we see is that the domain wall is prevented from entering the region with bulk with intertwiner correlations. So in this sense, we have the emergence of an horizon-like regions in the bulk. So this was for the homogeneous case, but the analysis can be easily generalized to the inhomogeneous case. Of course, the easing Hamiltonian, the interaction of the easing spins, the easing spins, nearest neighbor easing spins, and easing spins and boundary fields. Now the strength of the interaction is not the same for all links, but for every link is given by the entanglement entropy of that link. But we can still, so this first part of the Hamiltonian is still providing the area of the domain wall by counting the links that cross the domain wall and considering that each link is weighted by this factor, which encodes the dimension of the corresponding link. And so we still obtain, in the case of small or small contribution from the bulk entropy, an area law with a small correction given by the entanglement entropy of the bulk state in the easing down region. But in the case of the situation is significantly different in the case in which this term is not a small contribution to the small compared to the area term. So again, let me illustrate this with an example. So we consider in this case a spherical geometry. So spherical symmetry of the graph with the gradient of the edge spins. So the values of the edge spins increase with the radius. And we assume that bulk entanglement is present only in a certain disk of this graph with a certain radius r. Again, the disk is in a random pure state. And so we find the following. So if we write the condition for the easing domain wall to move toward the innermost shells, we find that this condition is always satisfied if we take the portion of the boundary sufficiently large. But this happens only in the case in which there is no in which the bulk disk is in a separable state, so there is no entanglement, interspinary entanglement that contributes to the boundary entropy. While if we consider the presence of this bulk entanglement in this disk, we find that the domain wall is prevented from entering this disk. So it's stopped at the shell in which the intertwiner correlations are present. So once again, we have the emergence.
Yeah, I have a question to the interpretation of the pictures. Because the pictures look very two-dimensional, but we have four volant vertices.
Mm-hmm.
So is that for 3D gravity or 4D gravity?
Is spatial slices or 4D gravity? So the we are considering.
Okay, you would actually consider something in three dimensions.
Yeah, in three dimensions. Yeah, this is just an example and just a toy model to show how we can have the emergence of these regions of the bulking, which the domain wall, the if you want, the Ryutaka Yanagi surface cannot enter. In the first case, we have seen in the homogeneous case that we can obtain this emergence of horizon-like regions by increasing the number of vertices. Here, the dimension of the bulk is controlled by the values of the head spins. So to obtain this effect, we take this radial gradient of spins so that when entanglement is not present, the Ryutaka Yanagi surface moves towards the...
Yeah, I'm wondering how literally I should take this picture, because you have a very particular planar graph which looks very much 2D for me and not 3D. And if I would generalize it to 3D, I would get higher valent vertices.
Yeah, but this was toy model to control the gradient of the head spins. So this geometry is ad hoc to see if what happens if the values of the head spins varies, but in a controlled manner. So
I should forget about the original GFT or whatever interpretation of space time.
Well,
this particular example.
If you want just to have an idea of how changing the parameters of the spin, the degrees of freedom of the spin networks can give rise to this effect. But in principle, is still a triangulation of a three-dimensional space. Of course, there is not a spherical symmetry as in 3D, since this is a planar graph, of course.
So I have a question of comprehension there. So if I understand properly, you're saying the more there is bulk entanglement, the less the surface, the Ryutaka Yanagi surface enters. Is that?
Yeah. Probably?
And then I am not sure, maybe I missed that. How do you draw the boundary of that surface? What's the criteria you have to design to draw that surface?
The surface is because when we the configuration that it's the value of the energy of the easing of the energy of the Hamiltonian of this easing model. So basically, this first part, the only contribution comes from the misalignment of spins, and it's so from the spin up and the spin down part. So the only contribution that matters are the one on the link with misaligned easing spins. And so you are cutting the link across the domain wall. So the surface that separates the spin up and the spin down.
Okay. Maybe to continue on Bianca's question. So is it obvious that if you're in 3D, this misalignment of spin is really a longer surface, or it could be a little bit all over the place?
Well, the point is that the system is trying to minimize the energy. So, of course, if we start from, in this case,
it's minimizing actually the area the length of the line or the area. So it's the same kind of minimal area description.
Yeah. Because we started from flipping down these boundary fields. So the first thing the easing spins in the that are nearest to this boundary are forced to induce to flip down. And so this process continues until the energy is minimized. So the model is trying to minimize the surface of this domain wall to minimize the energy. Okay, so we are the conclusion. So we have seen so the main tool of this work is using random tensor network techniques to evaluate to perform entropy calculation on spin network states, thanks to the mapping of the entropy to the evaluation of the free energy of a dualism model defined on the spin network itself. So we have seen two different applications. One regarding the bulk to boundary mapping of geometric data. So we have seen that quantum gravity states associated to open graph define bulk to boundary maps in the language of tensor networks. That in the homogeneous case, so for spin network graphs in which all spins take the same value, the corresponding bulk to boundary map cannot be anisometry. And then we have seen that for generic graphs, increasing the inhomogeneity of the spin assignment increases the orographic character of the map. So favors the orographic behavior in the sense that favors the attainment of the isometry condition. And then we have seen how the same tool can be applied to study the entropy of the boundary state. And in particular, we have seen that we have a bulk area law for boundary entropy in the case of null or small values of this bulk entropy, which provides the correction to the area law. While in the case of large bulk entanglement entropy, we can have the emergence of horizon-like surfaces in the sense that the minimal, the Ryuta-Kayanagi surface cannot enter this region. Now the presented results can be, of course, generalized in several directions. So first of all, the first step is the one of considering the spin superposition. In this case, of course, there is no so there are, first of all, several interacting easy models. If we consider, if we still take the randomization over single vertex wave functions, but of course the result strongly depends on the kind of randomization we take. The other step would be to consider superposition of graphs. So a way to perform it could be by introducing parameters that control the amount of entanglement, of link entanglement, in the sense that if we have maximum entanglement, there is the presence of the link. The other extreme cases in which the link state is separable, so the vertices are disconnected. And this results in a mapping of the entropy calculation to a random Hessian model in which the strength of the interaction, which is the link entanglement, is randomly distributed. And another point would be to apply the same construction to the condensate states or coherent states of the spin network vertex. Then the other point would be in the direction of an information theoretic characterization of black hole horizons. And in this sense, it would be interesting to derive in this context a sort of threshold condition for the emergence of these horizon-like surfaces in the bulk, analogous to what has been found via the typicality approach to the study of the local behavioral spin networks. With that approach, a sort of analog of the Hopf conjecture has been found, and so we plan to look for a similar condition in our framework. And let me also mention that the fact that we are using basically tensor networks, so we have we can import techniques from the quantum information field, and this would allow to, for example, to perform numerical simulation of these easy models to compute the boundary entropy and phase transition, for example, of the Yuta-Kayanagi surface. And in the end, there is, of course, the more ambitious goal of implementing the dynamics. And so this is also something we would like to investigate in the future. And there are several possibilities which depend on the quantum gravity approach we consider. And I mentioned here two interesting research directions to implement dynamics in a similar investigation for holography in 3D and 4D gravity. Okay, thanks.
Thanks, so Jenny, for the very nice talk. Okay, I already see that there are two questions. First, Hank.
Yeah, thank you for the very nice talk. It's good that you mentioned the condensate states. So I'm just wondering, because in like usual Ising spin, what I understand is that if you have a entanglement region, usually when you perform like RG flow, the region is going to percolate in the ordered state, right? It transitions into an ordered state. So it seems that here you're defining the black hole horizon or some sort of horizon with respect to the domain wall, right, of this entanglement region. But if I suppose my intuition is correct and that this region percolates in the ordered state, then that would mean the horizon just expands with the RG flow. So what does that mean for the I guess in the context of gravity, right?
Yeah, well, the application to the condensate state, it's actually more involved because, in that case, we are mostly looking at the back-to-boundary mapping, but so the application of these entropy computation in that case is more on the combinatorial structure of the underlying graph. So we want to see if we have so when we consider superposition of different graphs, the point is that we expect to have a superposition of these easing model that interact to each other. So the idea is that we can have the phase transition of this minimal area surface coinciding with the phase transition of the underlying geometry. But so this is something we still have to look to. So I'm not sure about the possible outcomes.
Mm-hmm. Because you did also mention that if you refine the vertices in the entanglement region, you sort of push the domain walls out. Yeah. So.
Yeah, yeah. So we expect an effect like that, so that increasing the dimension of the bulk, either by the number of vertices or the dimension of the degrees of freedom, the Yuta-Kayanagi surface is pushed out in a certain sense.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Next, there is a question by Bianca and then Laurent.
I have a comment and a question. the comment is first that actually graph superposition and posing dynamics is kind of the same, because what happens in this paper, quasi-local holographic dualities, you do some overspins.
Sure. I separated the two just because the first place, the graph superposition is something we can do even at the kinematic level, because we can, so just by controlling the link entanglement. Clearly the graph superposition and spin superposition are crucial for the dynamic.
But there you do some overspins also with particular weights, which actually might correspond to randomizing overspins. But what also happens is you do get BF theory, and actually things get independent from the particular choice of graph structure. So in that case, I'm not so sure that these arguments about you possibly introduce higher valent vertices actually holds, because if you sum over everything, you get kind of, you know, the Ponzano-Reggie model or BF theory, which is independent on your choice of graph to a certain extent. So there seems to be something happening there, going from fixed spin to sum over spins.
In fact, in that case, the randomization procedure is crucial, because if we consider the randomization, so one point would be just to randomize for each fixed spin subspace, but of course that case is just the result is just a coefficient in front of the resulting statistical model. And of course, if we in certain sense we are erasing the information which then lead to the easing model.
I had a question: where does this formula come from, or can you motivate it, which you use a lot, like the computation of the entropy in the end via the easing model?
This one? So
basically, you have this result that.
So the main
that 1-0 in the end is actually a partition function for an rising spin model with these states, with this thing.
Yeah, so the point here is that this trace, in the case of fixed spins, can be factorized over all degrees of freedom. So in the end, we have traces over all links separately, over the intertwiners, over the boundary edges. And here, the easing spins that is controlling the swapping operator on the vertex, that swapping operators can be factorized as well into swapping on the single link of the single interfiner and so on. And so we are in the end computing the traces of these entangled or non or separable states, for example, for the link. And so the resulting because the single link in the end of the trace depends on if we have a copy, so two swapping operators, which is basically us having the identity, or just one. So it depends, thanks to these maximally entangled link states, what we have is that for every trace for a link, for example, we can have or two swapping operators, one from one endpoint and one from the other, or just one or two identities. And here is where the disease interaction comes from. Depends on the alignment of the easing spins at the endpoints.
Thanks.
Hello, Eugenia. Thank you for your talk. I have a question about your last slides about dynamics. So So most of what you present is really kinematical, right?
Yeah.
And it relates to what Bianca was saying. So at some point, maybe you have a two-stage question. The first question is, so what's the goal there? Do you envision these informational techniques to get more information about the dynamics? So what's the interplay you're looking for?
Well, yes, there is a first strategy that is to apply this mapping to the easing model, even to more involved graphs. And for example, the implementation of the dynamics could also be for example, the Hamiltonian constraints can be imposed at the level of the back to boundary map itself. And so the same results are true for when we consider the states which satisfy the Hamiltonian constraint. But there are other directions as far as the import of quantum information techniques are concerned. For example, these map state duality I mentioned here is actually very powerful because now we are at the kinematic level, but in general, this is saying that the dynamical properties of a map can be translated to kinematic properties of a state. So this can simplify a lot the investigation. And then the other point is that we can, I also had in mind the for example, some since we have this bulk boundary map that can be considered as a quantum channel in the quantum information sense of legitimate quantum dynamics, so as a completely positive trait preserving map. So in that case, this channel state duality can be particularly useful because, as I said, we can move the problem from studying the dynamics, the dynamical properties of the map to the kinematic properties of a state. So there are actually several, but as I said, the dynamics is not something we have looked into yet, but...
So maybe I have a question or a remark about that, because several years ago with Levine and with, you know, Etera Levine and Daniele Ponzetti, we found a way to represent the translation group. So it's not the Hamiltonian constraints, but we have a representation of the diffeomorphism constraints on the spin network states. And somehow in the spirit of local holography is that, as Bianca was saying, the more constraints you have, there's two phenomena that appears. One is that you're creating a higher level of entanglement of your states. Here, it's a superposition, but you're also creating new sets of labels that you can fix. You say when you have the Gauss law, you have a new label that controls the dimension of your vertex, which is the spin. In the work with Etera and Daniele, you know, we have new labels, which are the momenta you can assign to the edges or to the vertex of your. So, I was wondering, I mean, it seems a natural, you know, study that you should include if you want to understand the dynamic. So I was wondering why you haven't included that kind of aspects going beyond just purely spin network states, but, you know, including the ones that now carry dynamical information, especially motion.
The tensor network formalism is very powerful in this context, even because it's easy to add the degrees of freedom to the network, and so there is the freedom at the level of the tensor network itself, it's just increasing the balance of the vertices by adding new degrees of freedom, which can be at different means, not matter degrees of freedom.
Yeah. Now, I'm not talking about adding new degrees of freedom. It's as we have there is a representation of the of the diffeomorphism constraints on the SPI network states. So it's just going beyond the SPI networks, the Gauss law, and beyond. Yeah. So it looks like this is something that, you know, so now that we have, and this is part of the dynamics, so it might be interesting for you to go back and try to see whether this, you know, new understanding of our momenta and translation is entering the spin network states are, you know, interplaying with your information. So you haven't looked into it. And no, I'm not going, it's not about tensor network. It's about that, you know, in quantum we have extra labels. We have charges of symmetry associated with diffeomorphism, for instance.
Okay. And so we're talking about the flexibility of the model, but yeah, thank you for.
I see one more question by Bianca.
Well, I actually made this remark in the context of 3D gravity, but it also holds in 4D gravity, which is that if you do implement the dynamics, we expect that things should be independent of the choice of graph. And that is related to diffeomorphism symmetry again. And in fact, kind of a weakness of these tensor network techniques is a bit that they kind of imply everything depends on the choice of graph. But if you consider on top of this the dynamics, at least in 2 plus 1, it works that you get graph independence. So maybe that is something really to study, how you do get the same representations, but on different graphs. On different graphs, you know, how do you get the same entropy formulas, but using different representation of different graph choices? How is that possible? I mean, in 3D, I can make sense of that. So, in higher dimensions, is actually the problem of implementing full diffeomorphism invariants. So, that's a key issue.
Yeah, thanks for the comment.
Are there more questions or comments? Okay, so if not, let's thank again Eugenia.
Thank you for the interesting questions and comments.